in recent years, when the yeshiva was beginning to be built up in Eretz Yisrael, the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tev and the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon moved in the early 1800s and so on. Now Eretz Yisrael is flourishing. So the first rabbi in Yafo was a rabbi by the name of Rav Yehuda Halevi, who was born in Dubrovnik. He had gone to Eretz Yisrael at a young age. He learned in Yerushalayim. Then they sent him to be a shlucha derachmana, to be a mishulach, to raise money for the yishuv, like the chidor, like there were many mishulachim, by raising money in Europe and sending the money to the aniyim in Eretz Yisrael. But then after a while, in the middle 1800s, the Svardashe Rabbanim in Yerushalayim encouraged him to move to the city Yafo and to help the Aliyah, when the people would come by boat, they would come to Yafo. And traditionally, the Ashkenazim would usually stay on till they got to Aku, and then they would go to Tzvat. And the Sfardim would get off at Yafo and go to Yerushalayim. The Mishnah at the end of Ksubas seems to imply that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to Chutz La'aretz. There's a bigger mitzvah to live in Yerushalayim than to live in other cities in Eretz Yisrael. So in the 1800s, early 1800s, middle 1800s, that was the practice, that the Sfardim would come to Eretz Yisrael, would land in Yafo, and then they would go on to Yerushalayim. The Ashkenazim would stay on till the boat reached Akko, and then they would move to Tzvat for some reason or another. So this Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was encouraged by the Svardashe Rabbanim in Yerushalayim. He should go to Yafo. He should help everybody out. He should have food for them to eat and a place to stay, rooms to stay overnight, till each one travels. So he was there for 54 years. And he was appointed as, they made big hespedim when he passed away. He was the first, what they called, chief rabbi. And there wasn't such a big hillock. First chief rabbi of the city, Yafo. Way earlier, in the earlier generations, when we visited, I think, the shul, someone was telling us about the Aliyah L'Saddam that took place in the 1600s. So that whole story, the Mice who show you was that a Christian girl was missing, a non-Jewish girl was missing. And the whole city was looking for her, and they knew that the girl used to stroll. They lived in the old city. The girl used to stroll a lot. She was a teenager. She used to walk outside of the city. So they were looking in this city, then they were looking outside of the city. So they finally found the dead body in the home of a non-Jewish woman, a Christian woman. So they arrested her, and everybody was angry. Why did she kill this non-Jewish child? So all day long, when the police had arrested her, so I think they arrested her at night, and the gates of the city were locked at night, so they couldn't put her into the prison in the city till they opened up the gates in the morning. So everybody from outside of the city was visiting to say what a terrible thing it is. They were cursing her and everything, and then one of the Nochrim commented to the woman, she was probably put up to it, you were probably put up to it by the Jews who need the Christian blood for their holiday. So she thought that's a good idea, to pick up that idea. So she accused one of the people in the city that he's the one of the Jewish people who lived in the city, he's the one responsible, he put her up to it. She admitted she did the murder, because the child was found in her home dead. But she said that the Jewish person put her up, but she didn't know any Jews in the city. So whom could she accuse? So she only knew one person in the city. His name was Yitzchak Yeshurim. She once had a business dealing with him. So she said that he was the one who put her up to it. So he was flabbergasted. So his instinctive reaction was, I don't know who you are, I don't even speak your language, I never spoke to you. It turned out that was a lie. He dealt with her in business and he did speak her language. But what he meant over here in the context was, I don't know what you're talking about. It had nothing to do with killing this child. So because they caught him in a lie, because he was denying everything, So they put him in prison, and he suffered for over 2.5 years. They tortured him, and they tortured him to encourage him to admit that he was guilty. After a long, long time, they finally killed the Christian woman who was really responsible for killing the baby, for killing the child. But they tortured him for over 2.5 years till he finally saw this must be Min HaShamayim, that the God of the Jewish people is protecting the man. It must be innocent. And then I guess it was still under the authority of Rome, because they write in the Svarim that the local judges sent the Shaila to the Supreme Court in Rome. Supreme Court get paskin that they paskin incorrectly, that you have no evidence against the person. So how did you torture him for 2.5 years? So they finally let him free. So this whole story about, it's a longer story, long, long, long story with all the details. They wanted to make a pogrom against the whole Jewish community because all the Jews are responsible. They need the blood for the matzahs and so on. So this whole story was written up in one of the Svarim on Chumash, written by one of the Rabbonim from Dubrovnik, Rav Aaron HaKohen, who wrote Chumash also. Rav David Pardo, who was the big Talmud Chacham at that time, left to him in, what was the name of the other city that we was in?
Sarajevo.
David Pardo was the Rav of Sarajevo, so in his Chumash, he refers to different Chumash written by this Rav Aaron HaKohen from Dubrovnik. One of the Chuvas that he refers to is interesting. In the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, it says HaKadosh Baruch is giving Prisi Shalom to Pinchas and to his descendants. So the Gemara points out that the Vav, the word Shalom is spelled with a Vav. Usually it's spelled Male with a Vav, but the Vav is cracked in the middle. So there's a discussion, Rabbi Feinstein has a discussion, but an earlier poskim, way earlier, from over here, from the 1700s, poskim discussed, what do you mean? A vav that's cracked in the middle is going to look like a yud on top. So that could be that's puzzle. It has to be cracked further down. So even above the crack, even above the empty space, it looks like a vav. So this Reb David Parda writes about this in one of his chuvas. He has an old Sefer Torah. He was after this Rav Aaron HaKohen. Rav Aaron HaKohen was in the 1600s, and David Pardo was in the late 1700s. So he writes, he has an old Sefer Torah from Dubrovnik, and it could well be that it was written by this Rav Aaron HaKohen. He wrote Shuvas Skana Haran, and he was also a Sefer. He wrote many Sefer Torah. So they think that he was the one who wrote that Sefer Torah, and that's why Rav David Pardo thought that it was so reliable. I just want to say a few more words about Rav David Pardo. He had the same practice we mentioned when we visited Belgrade, that the big Talmud Chacham there in the 1600s encouraged his Talmud, Reb Simcha HaKohen, to write Shuvas, and he wanted to train him how to write Shuvas. How to Paschal Shabbos, how to write Shuvas. I don't remember this in recent years. I don't know, did Rabbi Moshe Feinstein ever do that? Did he encourage, he would ask them what's their opinion? Would he encourage them to write Shuvas and then he would read them and comment on them? I haven't heard in recent years that people did this. So this Rav David Pardo did the same with his Talmidim. He had quite a few outstanding Talmidim, or big Talmidim Chacham, and he encouraged them also to write Shuvas. So I was looking over some of the chuvas of Rav David Pardo in his Sefer Michtam LeDavid. That's the Shavas of Chuvas. So he has a Shaila that he gave to his Talmidim, and they all wrote their opinion, and then he writes his opinion. He agrees with part of what they said. He disagrees. He has an interesting Shaila. There were 3 brisen scheduled for the same day. So by us, we can have 15 brisen on the same day. There are Moilim who do 15 brisen. They go from one to the other, to the other, to the other. They had 3 brisen, and it was physically impossible to do all the 3 brisen on one day. So you're only going to be able to do 2 out of the 3. So the question was, how do you decide which one has the kedima to be done today, and which one should be postponed till tomorrow? And the 2 that you're going to do today, which one should you do first, and which one should you do second? So the 3 brisen were, one was a baby who couldn't have the bris on the Yom HaShemini because he wasn't feeling well, so it was postponed. So it was a milu shalai bismano. The other one was a ger who was converting. And the third one was an Eved Kenani. Lincoln had not yet freed the slaves. So the Jews had Eved Kenani. And an Eved Kenani, whose mother was a Shivcha Knainis, has the same din as a similar, not exactly the same, has the same din as a baby Jewish boy, that the milah is supposed to take place on Shabbos. And the Rishayim all say that the milah is Decha Shabbos. The bris milah on the Eved Kenani is Decha Shabbos. So the Shaila was, they can only do two out of the three on this day. So which one should be pushed off till tomorrow? And the two they're going to do today, which one should they do first? So Rav David Pardo comes to the conclusion. He thinks that the Milah Bismana for sure, on the Eved Kenani, that has to take place today. You're not allowed to postpone that till tomorrow. To make it into a Milah Shaloi Bismana. When the bris takes place on the eighth day, that's a mitzvah b'shleimusa. When you postpone it, that's a mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa. So that for sure has to take place today. And then the toss-up was between the Eved, the ger with the cotton. So the ger, there's no din of Yom HaShemini on the ger. He's converting, he's an adult already. And the baby already missed it, it's not Yom HaShemini. So he says, because there's a mitzvah of Ahavta Misager, so that's why the meal of the ger should be done today, and the meal of the baby whose bris was postponed anyway shall be pushed off another day. So the two that you're doing today are going to be the ger with the meal of bismana of the Eved Kenani. So which of those two should take place first? So he thinks the meal of the ger should take place first, because v'ahavta misager, he's chalashing to become Jewish, so he should do his meal first. Very interesting. We haven't had this shaila come up since Lincoln freed the slaves. We don't have any milas again. We don't have any Eved Kenani anymore. But the way he analyzed the case is very interesting. Then he has another. Many of the chulas are dini mominis. So with complicated details of the case, I didn't look at any of those. I looked at the chulas that would be easier, that would be shaykh for us to be interested in. Then he has another shaila. Also, the Talmidim expressed their opinion. Several of his Talmidim wrote tshuvas, and he wrote his maskana. So an interesting shaila. He says, a woman died noontime. She had three sons. So one son had already finished eating lunch. He was in the middle of benching. And they told him that his mother passed away. So the shaila was, he's in the middle of a brocha of the benching, and an onen, mishamesa muta lefanav, is not permitted to recite any brachas. Only bracha that he says is Baruch Dayno Emes. We're not allowed to say any other brachas. The Gemara says that if someone tells me that my father died and I got a big Yerusha, so the Gemara says I say two brachas. I say Baruch Dayno Emes, that my father passed away. Then I say either Shechyanu Atayv Ameiti, because I got the big Yerusha. If I share the Yerusha with others, I say Atayv Ameiti, because it's a shared Hatorah. If I'm the only Irish, then I say Shech Yonu. So the question is, how does it say Shech Yonu? Okay, Baruch Dayno Emes, that's the one bracha that the Chachamim instituted that the Einan should say. This din that an Einan is not allowed to say any bracha, is not allowed to do any mitzvahs, this is not a din menator, this is midirabbanim. So the Chachamim said the Einan should recite the bracha, Baruch Dayno Emes, but how does it say Shech Yonu? So the Pashtus in the Gemara, I don't know, in the Shulchan Aruch, they don't explain it. Parshas and Gemara is, they tell me that my father passed away a while ago and the Kvura took place already. Not that I'm there and I'm going to become an Einan and be metapel in the Kvura. If I'm going to be an Einan and metapel in the Kvura, then I probably don't say Shech Yonah now. I know they don't spell it out in Shulchan Aruch, but I assume that that's Parshat Pshat. So the Shaila was, the son who is notified in the middle of Birchas Hamazon, middle of a bracha, should he continue to bench because he started benching before he even knew? I remember Rabbi Parnas from the yeshiva told us he had this shaila. I think he said when his mother passed away, so he was, his mother died in the hospital, and he was davening mincha in the hospital, and his sister walked over to him in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei and told him that his mother just passed away. So he had a shaila, what does he do? He's in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, does he stop davening in the middle of the brocha or not? So this is taka discussion in Shulchan Aruch. So this Rabbi David Pardo has, one son was holding in the middle of benching, so the shaila was, does it continue? The other son was about to eat lunch. The mother died around noontime. The the other son was about to eat lunch. So he's, an oinen is permitted to eat food, okay? Not allowed to have an elaborate meal with many, not like MDA gives meals, but he's supposed to eat. Ein mesa v'yachal, we don't eat be'aseva, ein mesa v'yachal means you don't eat elaborate meals, you just eat the kitzer, that you shouldn't be hungry, you don't have to starve. But you don't say any brachas, and you don't, the question is whether you wash netilas yadayim or not. So the so that's a discussion in the chidah. He said that there's an iser involved. You're not allowed to eat bread without washing. But he said, no, it's a mitzvah to wash until it's your diet. And maybe you should wash. That's the pesach in the mefarshim. You should wash until it's your diet without saying a bracha. Because you wash in order not to violate the iser of eating bread without washing. But you don't say a bracha, because one only recites a bracha when they're doing something that's a mitzvah. Here the oinen has to wash it in order to avoid violating the aveira of eating bread without netila, but he's not doing it to fulfill a mitzvah. And then the shaila, should he wash mayim achreinim? Because today, mayim achreinim is no longer a sakana. It used to be a sakana. You may rub some melech sedomis into your eyes. But today, where we live in Europe, there is no melech sedomis. So the question is, those who wash mayim achreinim, it's a mitzvah, those who feel you have to wash, it's a mitzvah midrabbanan. So should the oinen wash mayim achreinim or not? And then the third son was about, he had washed already, he was in the middle of his meal, and he was going to have a fleshig meal with basa v'yayin. So one of the dinim is that an oinen, mishemes mutalafanov, is not permitted to eat basar, not permitted to have yayin. So his shaila was, but he started the meal, the heter, and he planned to eat basa v'yayin. So the Rav David Parda has a whole discussion in this case. How would you pass on these for the three different sons? Each son had a different shams. He has a very nice tshuva. He writes very nice tshuvas. He has also a tshuva that comes up once in a long while, comes up, a Riyah Shaila. Somehow the Kehillah didn't have a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And so far found, they didn't have a shofar. It wasn't Sarajevo, it was a different Kehillah. They sent him the shofar after Yom Tov. So they didn't have a shofar available, so far found, so they couldn't blow shofar. And then they were Mekabel Shabbos early, but it would still be before the Shkia. Rosh Hashanah was before Shabbos. So the Shaila, and then somebody came to town with a Shofar. Someone came and delivered a Shofar before the Shkia on Rosh Hashanah, but after everybody had already been Mekabel Shabbos. So there's a din midrabbanan that when Rosh Hashanah cholias b'Shabbos, you're not allowed to blow Shofar. Yeah, but over here it's not really Shabbos, just they were Mekabel Tosefes Shabbos. So this was the Dion, and he paskens halacha that you do blow shofar. It's interesting, it's a rare shaila, hardly ever comes up, but the Aderes, who we spoke a little about him, he was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, who moved to Eretz Yisrael in 1901 to become the assistant rabbi in the Eidah Haredes in Yerushalayim. Then he died in 1906 before he had a chance to function as the rabbi. He also has a shaila about this. It took place in Europe. Such a similar shaila. It also says like that, but for different reason. They both said the same, but for different reason. Rav David Parda has another interesting tshuva. Chacham Avadya discusses this in his tshuva a little bit earlier. Akrainim discussed it. We have a klal, sofik brochas lahokil. Whenever there's a sofik regarding a brocha, so the rif, and Tosfos paskin, sofik brocha, if the brocha is benat Torah, let's say a person has a sofik, whether he said Birchas HaTorah in the morning. So the Mishnah Berurah passes like the Shagas Aryeh, quotes the Shagas Aryeh, who quotes the Ramban that Birchas HaTorah is deraisa once a day, every day. So if a person is mesupik, whether he's obligated to say Birchas HaTorah, he says sofik deraisa l'chumra. A person ate a whole meal, he ate bread, kidei suya, then he has to bench. So Birchas HaMozin is a mitzvah min HaTorah. So if the person is half drunk, and he's half drowsy, and he doesn't remember if he already benched or not, so we would say sofik brichas hamot, sofik deraisa lechomer. He would have to bench again. But whenever the bracha is only midrabbanan, so then you say sofik brachas lahakol. So the question is this identical with the rule of sofik derabbanan lekulam? But if the klal would be in some rare cases sofik derabbanan lechomer, then by bracha also we would go lechomer. Maybe you should say no, it starts off as the klal. If the bracha is deraisa, then you have to go sveik al chumra. But if the bracha is only the rabbanon, then the klal of sofik brachas lahakel is much more inclusive than Sofik Darabon Lekulam. So let's say the following case, the Lecha Mishnah raises this on a Rambam. What if you have a case where you have a sex faker? Maybe I'm supposed to say a bracha for one reason, and even if that's not correct, maybe I should say a bracha for a different reason. If you have a sex faker. So this is a machlekes and achreinim. So Chacham Avad Yepaskins, that if you have a sex faker, you do say the bracha. He's very, every other tshuva, Chacham Avad, he always makes sex fakers on everything. And this Rav David Pardo says no. He thinks that Zofik Brochus L'Akil is an independent klal. It starts off. The klal only applies when you're dealing with a bracha that's only the Rabbanan. But once you're dealing with a bracha that's the Rabbanan, then it's even much more inclusive than Zofik Rabbanan L'Kula. Even if you would have what we call a Sveik Sveik L'Chumra, that would indicate that you should say a bracha, you still, you say Zofik Brochus. You don't say the brach, any Safi called the Hu, you don't say the brach. One of the Talmidim of Rab David Pardo has a fascinating tshuva that I read through, is very interesting. He published a commentary that's called Shem Chodosh, a commentary on the Sefer Yireim, if I'm not mistaken. Sefer Yireim is a Sefer HaMitzvahs. So it has comments on every mitzvah. So in the introduction to the Sefer, he has an interesting tshuva, halacha lamaisa. I think he writes that his Rebbe Rav David Pardo was maskim with his psak. He has a discussion there. In the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Gemara, the common practice was that people would get married in two stages. First, they would have erusin, kiddushin, and then we would give the boy and the girl a year or so to buy clothing, to get a job, to rent an apartment, to put everything together that they should be ready to live together. And after a couple of months or after a year, they would have nisuin, and they would move in together, and they would live together and start raising a family. In the days of the Gaonim, they did away with this practice. So we do both together. We do erusin and nisuin, one after the other, very little time in between. We just have to preserve the practice that they had in the days of the Tanakh and the days of the Gemara, that there was a long pause in between Erisin and Yisuin, so we have the Kriyas HaKsuba. That was introduced by the Rabbi Natam, that you should read the Ksuba just to waste a little time in between. Well, let's say if the rabbi wants to hold a speech under the chuppah, so the best time to hold the speech is over there, rather than hold a drasha after all the brachas are over, before you go to the yichud room. That's not right. The Magen Avraham quotes from the earlier Achrayim that since the Rambam's opinion is that yichud constitutes nisuin, so you really shouldn't pause in between the birchas nisuin, which is recited under the chuppah, to going to the yichud room. By us, it takes 20 minutes. First, everybody kisses everybody else, and start kissing the parents and the in-laws and the girlfriends and the boyfriends, everybody's dancing and the music and the photographer. It takes so long. It's supposed to, the Maharil has an expression, Meritzim Esachasim Esachala Lecheda HaYichud. He rushed Nechasim Kala to the Yichud room in order not to be mafsik, not to have a shahiyah. Like if you say Shahakal Nia Bidvara, he's supposed to drink the coffee right away. You don't wait a half an hour. So over here also, the Birchas Nisun should be recited immediately before you do the nisuin. Even though it's not a bichas mitzvah, we don't say a shekin neshana b'mitzvahis avitzivano, but still the Rishonim say you shouldn't have too long a pause, you should go right away. So the practice was in the days of the Gaonim that they moved up the nisuin. You don't have a year's pause in between. You have the chuppah immediately after the erusin. Then the Rabbi Natam introduced that you have a slight pause in between. You have the hafsok of the kriyas haksuv. So the question was, what if a person is going to make kiddushin just like this? A boy dates a girl, and on the date he proposes, and the girl says, okay, she'll marry him. And then he gives her a ring, and he says, Hariat Mukudeshesli. So in Sarajevo, they made a takone that is prohibited. It's also to be Mekadosh and Isha if you're not holding by Nisuin right now. The Goyim introduced you shouldn't have a long pause. Not like in the days of Tanakh and the Gemara, you shouldn't have a long pause in between Eris and Nisuin. They never said it's an Issa to do it. They instituted you should move up to Nisuin right away, not to have a pause. So here in Sarajevo, they made a takona. that it's prohibited to be Mekadosh and Isha unless you're prepared to do the Nisuin right now. So the Talmud of the Rav David Pardo has a whole tshuva. One young man violated the Takana, and he was Mekadosh the Isha in the presence of two witnesses. The other, let's say, took the girl on a date to a restaurant, and then he proposed, and the girl said yes. And then he gives her a ring in the presence of two other kosher men and says, Hare Mekudeshes Li, would you say that because they made a takona and the fellow violated takona, should you say perhaps Afke ina rabbona lekidushimine, because he violated the takona de rabbona? Or should we possibly say, these are what are the issues he raises, should we possibly say, like the Gemara has a din called Milsa Darachmana Le Savid, Yavid Lai Mahani, since the rabbi is prohibited here, the Gemara is talking about Milsa Dabar Achmana. The Torah says you're not allowed to do something. Here we're talking the rabbis in Sarajevo made a takana that you're not allowed to be Mekadosh and Isha unless you're prepared to do Nisuin right away. So would you say that since it's a Milsa Dabar Achmana on Sabbath, Yavid Lai Mahani, you're not allowed to? So the final, he goes into whole pilpul on each one of these issues. Afkin Rabbanan and Yavid Lai Mahani, his final maskana is like most people today would say, that you do need a get. Then you certainly do need a get. One of the sons of David Pardo we mentioned was married to the daughter of the Chido. The two fathers knew each other for years, for 30 years, and then years later, because the Chido was a mishulah for the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, he traveled all over Europe to raise money. And he sent all the money to Eretz Yisrael. He was the one, wherever he would go, he would visit all the royal libraries in order to see what Kisvei had, what all Kisvei had they had. So one of the sons of the Rav David Pardo is married to a daughter of the Chido. So Rav David Pardo writes that his son, the Talmud Chacham, wrote this knockout tshuva. He was once in shul after Pesach was over, before Pesach Sheni. They were discussing in shul the following shaila: what if the Beis HaMikdash should be built today? Would all of us bring Pesach Sheni? You'd normally bring Pesach Sheni if somebody was Tomei or B'derech Rechoika and he wasn't able to bring her Pesach Bizmano. So what if there was no Beis HaMikdash? Would you bring Pesach Sheni? Or what if you would have a Gersh and his Gayer, the Pesach Rishon and the Pesach Sheni? And he raises all, what if a cotton becomes bar mitzvah between Pesach Rish and Pesach Sheni? What if there's going to be Trias HaMesim in between Pesach Rish and Pesach Sheni? Will the Mesim who were dead on Pesach Rish, would they have to bring Pesach Sheni? And that he raises all of the issues. Then he also raises the issue that the din is, when you build a new Mizbeach, we don't have the old Mizbeach, we're going to have to build a new Mizbeach. You build a new Mizbeach, so it's not sufficient to declare it should be Kodesh B'Kedushas Mizbeach. You have to be Mechanach the Mizbeach. How are you Mechanach the Mizbeach? So the din is you're Mechanach the Mizbeach by starting from the beginning. The beginning is the Tomet Shel Shachar. Whatever, let's say they build the Mizbeach in the afternoon, and it's too late in the afternoon, you can't bring the Tomet Shel Shachar. So bring the Tomet Shel Bein Habayim. So the Mishnah says no. Mishnah Menachos says no. You have to wait till tomorrow morning. Bring the Tomei Shel Shachar, you have to start from the beginning. Because you're not supposed to, l'chatchila, not supposed to bring any karbonis before the Tomei Shel Shachar, not supposed to bring any karbonis after the Tomei Shel Bein Arbayim. So the beginning of the daily Avodah starts with the Tomei Shel Shachar. So the Gemara says, can only be mechanechit with the Tomei Shel Shachar. So this, the son of the Rav David Pardo, wrote a whole Bir Halacha. Some of the dinim are explicit in the Gemara. The din about if there was no Beis HaMikdash at all. So the Gemara comes to the conclusion that that's Beferish in the Gemara. That Pesach Sheni is not a calendaric date. Minik Sfard is that on Pesach Sheni you don't say Tachnun. Minik Ashkenaz is that you do say Tachnun on Pesach Sheni. Why so? Because Pesach Sheni is not Yudalid Iyar. It's not a calendaric day. It's a month after Hakrovas Pesach Rishon B'Tahara Ayadei Rov HaTzibur. So if you didn't have that, if there was no Beis HaMikdash, so there is no, that year there won't be any Pesach Sheni. There's nothing to discuss. And about the Gershon is Gayer, in between Pesach Rishon Pesach Sheni and the Kotten who became Bar Mitzvah, that's a Gemara. The Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanoim. we paskin that the cotton shehigdil and the Gershon is Geyer are obligated to bring Pesach Sheni. The Trias HaMesim, the Gemara does not discuss. And then the other Shad is also not discussed in the Gemara. What if you built an Mizbeach and you're supposed to be Machanach the Mizbeach by bringing the Tomen Shel Shachar? Would you say, B'dievid, if you'll bring a Korban Pesach, would you bring a different Korban instead? They were supposed to wait, they built the Mizbeach in the afternoon. Instead of waiting till tomorrow morning to be Machanach the Mizbeach with the Tomen Shel Shachar, what if they brought the Tomen Shel Bein Abayim in the afternoon? Maybe you can say, B'dievid, that it's good. So that part of the tshuva by the Chidor's son-in-law, the Chidor quotes in his Sefer Birkei Yosef. He quotes it in Hilchas Erev Pesach. When the Shulchan Aruch talks about the proper practices and an Erev Pesach in the afternoon, since we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we can't actually offer the Korban Pesach Mamish, so at least we should read the Parsha of Korban Pesach. Or recite the Mishnayos in Pesachim about HaKrovas Korban Pesach, as the Navi says in the Shalma Forim Svaseinu, and everyone is unable to actually offer the Korbanos, at least he should talk about the Korbanos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will consider it as if we actually brought the Korbanos. So when the Shulchan Aruch talks about that, that in Erev Pesach one should discuss, one should read the Psukim and recite the Mishnayos about Korban Pesach, so the Chidor there quotes that in the days of the Balei HaTesuos there was a group of Rishonim who moved to Eretz Yisrael, and there was talk about the possibility, it never happened, never came to fruition, but there was talk about the possibility of making a Mizbeach and bringing a Korban Pesach. So they never discussed bringing a Korban Tomid. To bring a Korban Tomid, you have to collect Machzor HaShekel money. Who's going to go collect Machzor HaShekel money? It's a question, maybe Machzor HaShekel you have to collect from Roiv HaTzibur. So that's out of the question. You're not going to get Roiv HaTzibur to give Machzor HaShekel money. But the Shaila is Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is funded with private money. You don't have to have Machzor HaShekel money. So the Rishonim only discussed bringing a Korban Pesach. So the later Rishonim ask, well, how can you bring a Korban Pesach? You have to build an Mizbeach. Ein Machan Chanes HaMizbeach. Ela B'Tomen Shel Shachar. Tomen Shel Shachar, you need Machzor HaShekel money. So the whole story doesn't get off the ground. That's where the Chidor quotes from his son-in-law, the son of Rav David Pardo. And maybe that whole deal in the Mishnah, Machan Chanes HaMizbeach. Ela B'Tomen Shel Shachar. Maybe that's only a chumra. Maybe that's only a din l'chatchila. Maybe b'dieved, it would be good. This Rav David Pardo had quite a few outstanding talmidim who wrote beautiful svarim. Each sefer is beautiful. So I was looking at one of this svarim. It's called Api Zutri. It's a running commentary on Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer. He has 2-3 pages on every 2 lines in Shulchan Aruch. Chaber has 2 lines, the Rama has 2 lines, he writes 3 pages commenting on everything. I just started to look in the beginning of the first siman in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer starts with the discussion of the mitzvah of Piri Verivya. We don't require every bar mitzvah boy to get married the day he becomes bar mitzvah to try to raise a family. He's too young, he's not ready for marriage yet. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Pirkei Avos, Mashman Esrei L'chupa. So then there's a Gemara in Kiddushim, but the Gemara says, if a person is 20 years old already and is not married, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very upset. So the Rishonim raise a question, there it says 18, here it says 20. Isn't that a contradiction? So Tosfos says it's not really a contradiction. You're supposed to start dating at the age of 18, and you don't always marry the first, not everybody is lucky enough to marry the first girl that they date. Sometimes it takes a lot of dates. Sometimes it takes a long time. So you should start trying to get married at the age of 18. That's also a question, what does that mean? The day after his 17th birthday, he's 18. He already entered the 18th year. But that doesn't mean when he's already 18. But whatever it means, so the person should start to try to get married at the age of 18. And he should hustle to see to it that he marries at 20. That's what Tosfos says. So apparently the Balei HaTesuos realize that it's not so easy to decide whom to marry. You can't just date a girl and get married 1, 2, 3. So the Rashash, who lived in Vilna in the late 1800s, he was involved in the publication of the Vilna Shas. He funded much of it. So he lived at a time that all the shidduchim were arranged. In fact, he was a wealthy businessman, so his son, Matisyo Strashan, who had the famous Strashan Library in Vilna. So Matisyo Strashan had an arranged shidduch. He married a girl. It wasn't at all for him. The girl's father was also a wealthy businessman, but it wasn't for him at all. He was a big Talmid Chacham, Matisyo Strashan. And his daughters took piano lessons on Shabbos. That's why they write in the biography. It was a ridiculous shidduch. Seems to have been a ridiculous shidduch. So the Rasha Shepis didn't see that it should take so long. Why should it take 2-3 years from the age of 18 till the age of 20? So he gives a different suggestion. So he suggests in his commentary on the Gemara that the Seder that appears in the Mishnah is as follows. Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Ben Chomesh L'Mikra. When a child reaches the age of five, a boy reaches the age of five, so the father should try to teach him Tanakh. Get a rabbi to teach him Tanakh Mikra. He should finish all of Tanakh by the age of 10. And at the age of 10, his mind is prepared to learn Dinim. So he should teach him Mishnayis. Mishnayis is halachas psukas. He may not truly understand why the din is so, but he'll absorb all the Dinim from the age of 10 to the age of 15. Then when the child's mind is sufficiently developed till the age of 15, then he should start learning Gemara. So how many years does it take to pick up a derech and learn a Gemara? Apparently it takes 5 years to cover all of Tanakh from the age of 5 to 10. 5 years to cover all the Mishnahs from the age of 10 to 15. So how long does it take to develop a derech and learn a Gemara? So that's a machlekes hatanoim in the first perek in Chulin. The Gemara has two psukim in Tanakh. One pasuk says that the Levim used to the apprentice, the older Levim in the Beis HaMikdash for 5 years, from the age of 25 to the age of 30, to pick up how to do Shiras HaLevim and how to do the Hagafas Adlosses, how to lock the gates, how to do whatever they're supposed to function doing in the Beis HaMikdash. And then in Sefer Daniel, it says that when the Jewish young men who were sent into Golos Babel got involved in politics, so they took a course in political science for 3 years, and after 3 years they already knew how to be good politicians, and they were politicians for the king of Babel. So the Gemara says, how come over here it takes 5 years to apprentice, here it takes 3 years? Different bestam, I don't know how long does it take law school, how long does it take medical school? Each discipline different, depends how long, how complicated it is, how difficult it is. So the Gemara has a machlokes, which is the basic rule and which is the exception to the rule. So the shaila is for learning. Does it take basically 3 years to pick up a derech of learning? And Avodas Halevim is the exception to the rule. That took 5 years to be an apprentice. Or should I say, no, basically it takes 5 years to pick up any chokhmah. And politics is easier. So politics, the days of Melech Bavel, that only took 3 years. So the Gemara says, if you have a person who's been learning for 3 years and he still didn't see Simin Bracha, should we tell him, forget it, go into a different discipline, go into a different field? But he say, no, maybe sometimes it takes up until 5 years to pick up what's going on in learning. So the Rashash thinks that maybe this contradiction between the two Gemaras, whether you get married at the age of 18, the age of 20, maybe depends on that Shaila, because the Gemara says it doesn't make sense to get married before you figured out how to learn. The Gemara says, Rechaim Liv Savara, if he's going to be married, going to have an obligation to make a parnasa and the yasek bater, you won't be able to learn. So you only mechuyev to get married if you've already started learning Gemara at the age of 15, you've already developed the derech. So how long will that take? Will it take 3 years or 5 years? So this is the Rashash has like this. I was surprised to see that this Talmud of Rav David Pardo has this in the beginning of his Sefer on Ebenezer. That's in the first Siman of Ebenezer. And he has a whole sefer just on the first 26 simanim, 25, 26 simanim in Ebenezer. Every single word in Shulchan Aruch, he analyzes. Every line, every word. Why did the Shulchan Aruch write like this? Why did he write like that? And what the source is for everything. And he quotes, these were Sfardim, he quotes all the Sfardish Sfardim that unfortunately none of us, the Ashkenazim, have been negligent. We never look at these Sfardim. But they were big Talmid HaChachamim. He must have had a tremendous yeshiva there, Sarajevo, where he raised an unusual group of Talmidim who wrote their own svarim. Something really unusual. Last Shabbos we read Parshas Vayeschanan. At the beginning of the Parsha, in the first Aliyah, the Torah prohibits intermarriage, and it writes both forms of intermarriage in one pasuk. Is bitcha v'sita nevdalis, bitcha v'sikach levenecha. But in Shulchan Aruch we distinguish between the two. The Ramah in the Simen in Yerodeh about Yehoreh Bal Yavar, Simen Kuf Nun Zayin, quotes a Ramban, and he paskens halacha l'maisa like that. That for a Yisrael to marry a Nachris, to live with a Nachris, is Mochomer, that's Yehoreh Bal Yavar. For a Yisraelis to be married to a Yisrael, to a Nachri, that's an aver, like eating chaza, like eating bas b'cholam. That's an aver. But for a Yisrael to marry a Nachri, that's considered much more chomer, because it's mamet bein lavet zara. The children will not be Israel. So some of us were very shaken up yesterday when we heard the presentation in the shul. They were telling us that the rabbi of that community had three sons, and all three intermarried. Each one of the sons married a girl from a totally different religion. One married a Christian, one married an Orthodox, and one married a Muslim. One of them, none of them married Jews.
Wait till the turn.
That's the. In fact, the minig was Rabbi Gershon Bar Agoila lived at a time that they were forcing the Jews to convert. So his son, that's how the story goes, his son converted to Avodah Zarah. So the Rishonim quote that when the son converted to Avodah Zarah, the father sat Shiva. The question was, they sat Shiva 7 days or 14 days, different versions, what happened? But that was the minhag for many generations. When a Jewish relative would convert, the family members would sit Shiva. So then the minhag developed on top of that minhag, that if a Jewish man marries a Nachris, that's equivalent to converting. Because the Ramah quoted the Ramban that that's Yehoreh Bal Yavar. It doesn't seem that the Rebbe really was a minig in the reverse. If a Jewish girl marries a non-Jewish man, that's not considered Yehoreh Bal Yavar. That's not that chum, because the children will be Jewish. But a Jewish man who marries a Nachris, that's considered Yehoreh Bal Yavar. So the minig used to be that the family would sit Shiva. When we recite Kriya Shema, the first parsha of Shema is in Parshas Vayeschanan, last week's Sedra, V'Hayoyim Shemaya is in Parshas Ekev, in this week's Sedra. So in V'Hayoyim Shemaya it says, we should be careful not to worship Avodah Zarah. It's such a concern about worshiping Avodah Zarah. So apparently if a person doesn't learn Torah, a person is not careful with the Shmiras HaMitzvahs, a person could go all the way to the end, all the way to worshipping Avodah Zarah. So that's what happened over here. Apparently there was no so slack in Liban HaTorah, so slack in Shmiras HaMitzvahs, till the point of marrying a Nachris, that's Mamash Yehoreh Bal Yavar. That's the tragedy. The fellow yesterday told us that in another generation or two, the whole community will disappear. I don't see why it's going to take one or two generations disappearing already. There's no Liman HaTorah, there's no Shemiras HaMitzvahs, no Shabbos, no Yom Tov, no Kashrus. What do you mean Jewish identity? There's no Jewish identity. Everybody's intermarried, so they're not Jewish. It's a great tragedy all over.